The unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha. Today, for our first talk, we're going to talk about Dogen's chapter on taking refuge in the three treasures of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And actually, this chapter is one of the very last ones that Great Master Dogen wrote. In fact, he only had it in draft form. He never got it quite finished, and after he died, Kona Jo, his disciple, proofed it and kind of tidied it up. His last few chapters are really simple. Maybe because they were in draft form, he didn't, finish them. But there's something about them. This last chapter, one of these last chapters, is talking about taking refuge. It was the first thing you do to become a Buddhist. It's really interesting that in these last talks, he comes back to the basic, simple practices. Rama Master did that too. Rama Master Jiyu, in the last years of her life, her teaching became simpler, more down to the basics. And I noticed other teachers have done the same, so there's something in that for us. So Dogen starts. It says in the Procedures for Cleanliness in a Zen Temple, do you show respect for Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha? It is quite clear that in India and China, the Buddhas and ancestors authentically transmitted the practice of making venerative offerings to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha out of respect for them. If you do not take refuge in them, you will not revere them. And if you do not revere them, you will not be able to take refuge in them. This seems fairly straightforward. It's essential to take refuge in the three treasures and to venerate them. We all know this, and yet there's more here than we might think. As Dogen says, if we don't take refuge in the three treasures, we won't revere them. If we don't revere them, we can't take refuge in them, and they won't be able to help us. To revere the three treasures, being willing to bow, to acknowledge something greater than ourselves, while bowing lasts, Buddhism will last. This is essential, and we all know we bow all the time, to help us to relinquish me, my importance or something. When we're full of ourselves, we don't leave room for anything else. When we're full of our own opinions and views, we're deaf to advice from other people. To bow is to open the heart, to be willing to listen, to accept the Dharma, something bigger than myself. So when we venerate the three treasures, we can really take refuge in them. We trust them to help us, and then they can help us. He goes on. We invariably receive the spiritual merit of taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Whenever there is a spiritual connection between them and us sentient beings, as well as between master and disciple, the spiritual connection between us and the three treasures, we have heard of the three treasures. We all have this spiritual connection. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here at all. It's a rare opportunity, they say, to encounter the three treasures, a rare opportunity to have a human body and to find the three treasures, to recognize them, to recognize their priceless value and to take refuge in them. Sometimes people hear of them, but they don't get it. It goes right by them. That's fine. It's just we're fortunate. The spiritual connection between master and disciple. Over and over again in the Shobo Genzo, Dogen talks about making a spiritual connection with a master, training with a master. Monks need a master, yes. But Dogen isn't just talking to monks here, I don't think. Taking refuge in the three treasures is for all of us. It's what makes us a Buddhist. So it's not just talking to monks. So I think that for lay trainees, I would tend to take this not so much literally, training with a master, but rather meaning making a commitment to a particular path of training. It's the commitment that's important. This is how we make the spiritual connection. Not endlessly wandering from one place to another, looking for the perfect place, the perfect teacher, the place where our self feels comfortable. We may need to wander for a while to find our place and our practice. But when we find our path of training, we need to commit ourselves to it, settle down, and be willing to follow this path through thick and thin, regardless of all our views and opinions about it or anything else. Many of you here are long-time dedicated trainees who have trained with us for many years. This is a spiritual connection that you have nourished all this time. It's impressive. So, many of us, we have the spiritual connection, but we keep nourishing it. Dogen goes on. Whether we're in some exalted celestial state or among ordinary human beings or in some hell or acting like some demon or beast, if a spiritual connection takes place, we do not fail to humbly take refuge in the three treasures. And once we have taken refuge, we promote merit in life after life. Even if we happen to be misled by bad companions or meet up with some devilish hindrance, so that our good roots are severed for the time being, not forever. Or even if we lack like an ichantika, someone who seems like they can't train at all. Ultimately, our good roots will continue on and we will promote their spiritual merit. The meritorious virtue of taking refuge in the three treasures is ultimately not subject to extensive decay. So no matter what state we're in, no matter what situation we're in, whether we're in some exalted state or an ordinary human being or behaving like an animal or a demon, we still have this spiritual connection. Never doubt it. We can still come back and humbly take refuge. We have not severed our good roots. Even if we make some terrible mistakes and seem to sever them, these good roots will continue. We will eventually come back to the path. The merit of taking refuge won't just die. And in some of the stories Dogen talks about later, this is clear. People have taken refuge in the three treasures, then they make hideous mistakes, but eventually they can come back. But it's better if they don't get into that misery to start with. Well, sometimes it's hard for us to believe that our spiritual good roots cannot be severed, that we actually have them and we can foster them, nourish them, keep coming back to them. We might have made some really bad mistakes in our life or terrible things may have happened to us, but don't think that you have severed your good karmic roots. We can always come back to the three treasures. And the important thing is to trust this. Trust. Dogen goes on. Taking refuge in the three treasures means wholeheartedly acting from pure trust. Faith. Vital. And this is another of his themes all throughout the Shobo Genzo. The importance of faith. Nourishing faith. With hands in gassho and bowed head, reciting the three refuges. This is the protection, he says, for our spiritual life. Thus, even though our body and our mind right now, instant by instant, are arising and vanishing, our aspiration for Buddhahood will surely long continue to thrive until we fully realize our enlightenment. Our body and mind, instant by instant, are arising and vanishing. Our body is constantly changing from moment to moment, our mind even more so. There's more in this, but we'll come back to it at another time. So our aspiration will surely long continue to thrive until we fully realize, make real our enlightenment. To take refuge means to keep returning to submit ourselves devotedly to. Dogen says it's like a child returning again and again to its parent, because it needs the protection of its parent, and because it loves its parent, there's devotion there. He says it's like people depending on their leader who rescues them and frees them. The Buddha is our great master, our great leader, so we take refuge in him. The Dharma is the good spiritual medicine, and the Sangha is our excellent spiritual friends. Someone once asked a master, "Why do we take refuge in these three treasures?" The master answered, "Because in the long run, by making these three treasures what we return to, they can help us sentient beings free ourselves from the delusion of life and death and realize the great awakening. This is why we take refuge in them." The delusion of life and death. There's a lot more going on than my life and my death. Our living and dying take place within the life of Buddha, the great life that encompasses everything and everyone. And our little life and death are just an arising and passing away of elements and skandhas. They come together from the universe and eventually they dissolve and become other things. In the Buddha's time, the elements were considered to be water, earth, fire and air. And nowadays, what we call the elements are things like hydrogen and oxygen and carbon. It's all more complicated. But exactly the same principle is at work. Things come together and then dissolve into other things. Everything is a part of everything else. Nothing is separate in any way. And this non-separation, again, is a constant theme of the Shobo Genzo. We are all made up of the same stuff as everything else. It's a wonderful teaching. We're not special. We're not everlasting. We come together, the arising of the elements, the skandhas, and then we dissolve. And then they go on to something else. Dogen goes on to talk about different ways of looking at the three treasures. I won't go through all of them. But he talks about, hang on, where are we? The three treasures as things that physically exist. The Buddha treasure as Buddha statues, and pictures, and shrines. The Dharma treasure, the scriptures, the Sangha treasure. Those who shave their heads and dye their robes and observe the precepts. Now in the Buddha's time, what they first called the Sangha were those who became arahants, who completely realized the truth. And then they widened it to all those who are following the Buddha's teaching, the fourfold Sangha, male and female monks, male and female lay trainees. And nowadays here in the West, the Sangha, I think, means anyone, I would say anyone who's taken the three refuges, anyone who has committed themselves or is trying to commit themselves to the path of the Buddha. This is the Sangha. We are the Sangha. It's not some special people who are somebody else. We go on. The Buddha says, when ordinary people get worried and afraid, they often seek refuge in unwise places and things, up mountains and up trees and in all sorts of strange places. And this doesn't help them. But when people take refuge in the Buddha, as well as in the Dharma and the Sangha, then by means of their wise discernment, They continually observe everything from within the Four Noble Truths, namely, being aware of suffering, being aware of how suffering accumulates, being aware of how suffering is transcended forever, and being aware of the Noble Eightfold Path. Taking this refuge is to take the most excellent refuge. This is the one to be most valued. Without fail, it is by means of taking refuge in this way that we can rid ourselves of suffering. We can't run away from our suffering and our fears. It doesn't work. We can run up a mountain or go out hiking, but we've still got our suffering. We come back and there it is. It can help a little bit, but in the long run, to take refuge in the three treasures, we can face our fears, our suffering, our worries, our states of mind directly and sit still right in the midst of them. We can see how we create suffering and we can stop doing it rather than trying to run away from it or think it's somebody else's fault. But we have to look at it clearly. And we need help to do this. It's not easy. We need the help of the three treasures. To take refuge in the three treasures, then we have the faith and the strength to look at our suffering and work with it truly. And Dogen says, the human body is hard to come by, and the Buddhist treasures are rarely met with. So don't waste time by taking refuge in false views which don't help end suffering. By quickly taking refuge in the three treasures of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, you will not only be liberated from suffering, but you will also fully realize enlightenment. We will make it real, we will embody it. Now Dogen gives a number of examples of beings who are in some difficult situation because of previous misdeeds. And they take the three refuges and turn their karma around. The hungering dragons. There were 26 million hungering dragons who came to the Buddha, miserable. And they said, they were shedding a flood of tears and said, all we desire is that you, out of your pity, will rescue us from our suffering. And then they say, you know, we recall a time in a past age when we dwelt within the Buddha Dharma and been able to leave home life behind. Then we went to great lengths to cultivate all manner of evil deeds. And because of this, we spent immeasurable eons in these bodies, dragon bodies, dwelling in the three evil paths. So they're asking him for help. And the Buddha simply gives them the three refuges. And as Dogen says, aside from imparting the three refuges to them, the Buddha himself had no other method or technique for helping rescue the dragons. He simply gives them the refuges. He doesn't need to do anything fancy. He just gave them the refuges. They had had them before, they had lost them. He gives them to them again. This is all that they need. It's a very powerful thing. Then there's a blind female dragon who is in a terrible state. She's covered with worms. She smells awful. She looks terrible. Just really hard to bear to look at. There's quite a description of this poor female dragon. But the world-honored one, seeing the dragon woman's blindness and the depth of her suffering, asked her from his great compassionate heart, "My little sister, what conditions have caused you to have such a wretched body? What deeds in a former life have brought you to such a state?" And she tells him, "How kind, my little sister, this poor, pathetic creature whom everybody else probably turns away from in revulsion." The Buddha says, "My little sister." There's a connection there. He knows she's not beyond hope. "What's happened to you? How did you get yourself into this state?" And she tells him she broke the precepts. Again, she had taken the refuges. She'd been a monk, I think, and had done all kinds of dreadful deeds for a long time. It wasn't just a one-off thing. So she ended up in this dreadful state. And again, he gives her the refuges, but he does more because she needs more help. He takes holy water into his mouth and sprays it on her body. And he says, "If what you say is true, May you be completely cleansed of your defilements and problems. And she has told him the truth, so she's completely cured of all her afflictions. But she's still a dragon. The person's karma doesn't just vanish. The dragons were still dragons. But things turned around for them. They spent the rest of their lives in wholehearted devotion to the three treasures, knowing that they hadn't completely severed their good roots. They could come back, and that they would eventually work through their karma. And this is completely different from their despair and suffering before when they felt hopeless. They come to the Buddha. He gives them hope. He says, you've not completely severed your good roots. Take the three treasures again. Here we are. Start again. And they know that they will work on their karma, relinquish their suffering, and finally come to truth. And it's the same for us. We still have our karma. We start to train. We still have our faults, our limitations, our weaknesses. But we can turn things around. We can train with them. We have the body and mind that we have. We have our weaknesses and so forth. We don't get rid of them. We accept them and train within them. And taking the refuges and keeping to the precepts, following the way of the Buddha, completely turns things around for us. Because it's not just the conditions, but it's how we work with the conditions that's really important. Not blaming other people for our suffering. These dragons didn't blame anybody else for what had happened to them. They knew that they had made serious mistakes. This is how they ended up. And they could start again. The Buddha doesn't turn away from them. He helps them. Now somebody asks the Buddha, just what is a lay Buddhist? Thereupon the Buddha explained the matter to him, saying, if there are good disciples, male or female, who are in possession of their faculties and have accepted the three refuges, they are called lay Buddhists. Being in possession of your faculties, I think it means knowing what you're doing it consciously, you know. It doesn't mean you're perfect. They're called lay Buddhists. Then the person asked, world-honored one, what is meant by calling someone a 10% lay Buddhist? The Buddha replied, if one accepts the three refuges along with one of the 10 great precepts, that person is called a 10% lay Buddhist. There's no judgment here. You know, the person is still a Buddhist because they've taken the refuges and they keep as many precepts as they can. Rinpoche Masterji used to talk about this. He'd say, sometimes, and if somebody was a butcher, for instance, they couldn't take a precept against killing. So they'd take all the other ones. They'd do the best they could. We all try to keep to the precepts, and we may have great difficulty with one or more of them. Sometimes we feel as though we're not keeping any of them. But we still have the merit of the three treasures. We'll still keep on doing our best. We have taken the precepts. We do our best to come back to them and keep training ourselves with them. So we're more than 10% Buddhists, which is encouraging. Becoming a disciple of the Buddha invariably depends on the three refuges. Whichever precepts we may accept, we invariably take the three refuges, and only then do we take precepts. Therefore, it's in accord with the three refuges that one obtains the precepts. So Dogen made the three refuges part of the precepts. That's why we have the 16, the three refuges, three pure precepts, and the 10, as we know. Now there's a lovely story about a wild fox. Foxes seem to have a special place in Chinese Buddhism. I don't think it's because China's overrun with foxes. A wild fox sometimes means someone who is gravely deluded and misleads others. Sometimes what it is, like Hyakujo's fox, a person who had given poor teaching about karma and was reborn as a fox for 500 lives. I don't think it's an accident he ends up as a fox and not a squirrel or something. But the fox in this story is the most unusual fox. This fox is running away from a lion who wants him for lunch. And the poor beast falls into a well and was unable to get out. For 3 days, it languishes, struggling to get out of this well, really pathetic, would have been exhausted. And after 3 days had passed, it realized it was going to die there. And it composed the following poem. Oh, woe is me, to be thus on suffering's brink, losing my life, drowned deep in some hillside well. How transient all myriad things prove to be. Alas, that I cannot leave my body for the lion's feast. At least I'd have had some lunch. In homage, I take refuge in the Buddhas of the Ten Quarters. May they know that my heart is pure and free of all self. This is some fox. And at that moment, Shakendra, one of the guardian deities, overheard someone taking refuge in the Buddha. Awestruck, his hair stood on end. Being mindful of the Buddha of old, he thought to himself, I, a solitary drop of dew, lack a master to guide me as I drown myself in my addiction to sensory greeds. He's just thinking about himself. He doesn't think about this poor fox. So he goes down, flies down with a celestial host of 80,000 attendants, desiring to explore more closely what was going on in the well. And he saw the wild fox at the bottom of the well attempting to claw its way up and out, but without success. Once more thinking only of himself, Shakendra then said, O saintly person, you may well be thinking that you are lacking in some way. Though I now see the form and figure of a wild fox, clearly you are a bodhisattva, and not someone who is limited only to mundane abilities, for it was not a mundane verse that you recited. O benevolent being, I pray you will give voice to the essentials of the Dharma for the sake of this host of celestial beings. Here's this poor fox, been stuck in the well for 3 days, about to drown, and Shakendra comes and asks him to teach him the Dharma. The fox says, even though you're a guardian deity of the Dharma, you've obviously not had instruction in it. While a Dharma master is down below you, you've placed yourself above him, because you always put the Dharma above yourself. You ask for the essentials of the Dharma, but completely fail to show proper respect. Because the waters of Dharma are untainted and pure, they can save people. But so how come you crave to have them by prideful means? And then immediately Shakendra gets it. Because the guardian deity is filled with shame. Shakendra is filled with shame. He immediately sees his mistake. But his 80,000 celestial beings all sort of laugh nervously because nobody, you know, a wild fox doesn't address a guardian deity in this way. But Shakendra immediately says, I'm really sorry. And he says to the celestial beings, I pray do not hold on to your astonishment and fears. What he said is undoubtedly due to my self-deception and greed, along with my lack of virtue. By all means, you must listen to the essentials of the Dharma from this person. So he lets down his celestial robe and to help the fox, who grabs hold of it and gets pulled out of the well. Then they give him a good meal, and then he can preach the Dharma. It's polite to, you know, not leave this poor beast in the well for any being, but you ask someone to teach you the Dharma. You don't leave them in a well and not feed them. So, but Shakendra gets it. Immediately accepts the fox's correction. He learns from an animal. And this story is called Shakendra's bowing to an animal and taking it for his teacher. Because the fox has something to teach him. Not just the Dharma, but look at his pride and selfishness. Venerating the three treasures, bowing to a fox that can teach us the Dharma. But until Shakendra lets go of his selfishness and shows respect and simple kindness, the fox can't teach him anything. It's not just the fox is stuck in his well and he wants to get out, but he can't teach somebody who doesn't let go of his selfish thinking, just thinking of himself, this poor beast, you know, in some extreme situation. Respect and kindness and relinquishing selfishness. And this is why pride and selfishness are such obstacles in training. We all have pride and selfishness. Sometimes we're not aware of them for quite a while, and we wonder why we keep running headlong into the wall. And then we might see, oh, how self-centered I am. Look, I'm just thinking about myself, and I still have quite a bit of pride. And maybe we can let go, like Shikendra, and change. It takes a lot to make this change, to see our own selfishness and pride. As I said, we all have it, and yet to see it, oh. All these stories that Dogen has related, and I haven't gone through all of them by any means, they all point out the immense value of being able to hear of the three treasures and take refuge in them. And we have heard of the three treasures and we have taken refuge in them. And they also show us the importance of humility and veneration, bowing to the three treasures, taking refuge in them, making offerings to them. This goes beyond bowing to any particular thing or any person. When you bow to the Buddha statue, we aren't just bowing to a form made of fiberglass, we're bowing to what it represents, that which is greater than ourselves, that which frees us from suffering, the suffering of selfishness. We bow in reverence and gratitude. When you bow to each other, we're bowing to the training the other embodies, their aspiration for the way of the Buddha. We're all trying to do something about ourselves. We bow to each other, and we bow to other beings too. To really deeply take refuge in the three treasures completely changes our life. The shift from me is the most important thing to seeing it's not about me and my stuff is pivotal. Turning towards that which is greater than ourselves. Taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha helps us to make this fundamental shift. It helps us to let go of me and entrust ourselves to that which is greater than me. It can take a long time. It's not usually a sudden shift, although it can be. Usually it takes a long time. We're not in charge. Humility and veneration. We don't take refuge just once. We keep on doing it over and over and over again. When we're worried or things are really difficult, we can entrust ourselves to the three treasures and ask for their help. When everything is fine, we still do it. Constantly turning towards the three treasures, coming back to them. This is to live the life of faith. This is what we do. Deeply taking refuge in the three treasures, relinquishing me and it's all about me, and turning towards that which is greater. 180-degree shift of perspective. A final note. When Dogen was dying, staying in the home of a lay disciple, probably in great pain, I think he may have had cancer. He was dying, he wrote out the characters for Buddha, Dharma, Sangha on a piece of paper and hung this piece of paper on a pillar in his room. And he made it his practice to get up with his remaining strength and circumambulate this pillar representing the three treasures. This was his simple practice in the last days of his life. And it says a lot for us. Homage to all the Buddhas and all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas and all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.